Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, George Clooney and Adam Sandler talk to me about their new movie, Jay Kelly, and a bit more besides, including good and bad reviews and having your cheesecake and eat it. I also talk to the star of the new boxing movie, Christie, the one and only Sydney Sweeney, along with her co-star Ben Foster. You can contact the show by emailing screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud or wherever you get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Good weekend to all. I do hope you're well. And yes, we have a great show this week with some serious talent, which we'll be getting to shortly. But talking of great shows and serious talents, I just want to mention I was at Bob Dylan in the Three Arena on Tuesday night. I really enjoyed it. You know, Bob Dylan, I've seen him a good few times. I've probably spoken to you about it before. You know, if it was anybody else, you might go, I'm not so sure about this, but it's Bob Dylan. I was talking to a very famous Irish DJ who I said, what do you think of that? And he said, shite, just like every other time I've seen him. And then he said, I wish he'd stop coming so I'd have to stop going to see him. The thing is, Bob Dylan, especially at this age, reinterprets a lot of his songs, changes the melodies, changes the words, the arrangements. So you take a song like Desolation Row, which was a delight to hear, and he was tinkering with it and it became something else. But you have to go in knowing that. And I did. So I really enjoyed it for the most part. Very similar set to the one he played 3 years ago, but you can't have it all. But he also finished with Rainy Night in Soho, which was incredible. And he was in superb voice. You know, Bob Dylan is not a great singer, but he's a great vocalist. And his vocals were on the money. I might just mention two separate people in different sections of the room were thrown out because they were pissed, is the only polite way of putting it. Some guy about three rows from me, causing all sorts of bother, kept shouting out, Bobby, and was removed. And then someone somewhere else was removed. Now, the thing is, folks, you want to go to a gig, you want to enjoy yourself, you want to maybe have a beer or two, but don't get smashed. You know, most gigs now, or a lot of gigs, particularly in the Three Arena, are seated. So you're out drinking half the day, and then suddenly you're in this tiny little seat, not much leg room, staring at a stage. I'm not sure, unless you're in a field, I'm not sure getting hammered is the way to attend a gig, if I may say so. And people cheered when those two people were taken out. So, you know, no one wanted that. So I realize I sound like Old Man River, and maybe back in the day there was something about booze and rock and roll going hand in hand, but not in the Three Arena. But anyway, so stay somewhat sober at a gig is my advice. Now, in TV this week, I was watching this.
I'm a private investigator. I was hired by your wife to figure out whether you were having an affair. It seems like you are. And he's not a surgeon. He manages a Pep Boys.
Look, I don't know what she's paying you, but I will double it. Plus, free oil changes for life.
I want a real PI case, something juicy.
This is the job.
Jack Berenger, president of Wheeler College.
What can we do for you?
My laptop was stolen.
Okay.
This laptop is worth $400 million.
Juicy.
Yes, a flavor there of the new season of A Man on the Inside. This is season two of a show that was out last year, I believe it was, although time is fluid for me these days. It could have been 2 years ago on Netflix, starring Ted Danson, based on a real case about a care home where a man goes in as a mole. It was called the Mole Agent. There was rumours of mistreatment in this retirement community care home, and someone was sent in as a private eye. And this was turned in to A Man on the Inside on Netflix, where Ted Danson kind of by default, almost by accident, became a PI in a care home and went in and befriended people in a bid to find out a secret in the last episode. He was also dealing with the sad passing of his wife, and it was a lovely TV show. It was just very gentle. Some people claimed it was a bit dull. I just thought it was very wholesome. It was very unoffensive in a good way. It is now back with season two, where Ted Danson, as you heard there, is looking for a new case. This time, he goes to a college called Wheeler College, which again seems to be a lovely college, but it's owned and funded by a rather nefarious fellow. And there's been a stolen laptop, and then you'll find out subsequently that a portrait has been defaced, and he's hot on the case. What's nice about this season is he finds a romantic relationship in the form of his actual wife. Mary Steenburgen, in real life, plays one of the art lecturers, I think she is, and they begin a romance, and they're on the quest of this missing laptop and what's going on at Wheeler College. Here's the thing, it's exactly like season one in that this is really wholesome and enjoyable and funny and sweet. Some of the characters, like his daughter and a friend of his from the care home, have returned. He's constantly referred to as being a silver fox, which is kind of funny in various places. There's a lovely scene with, or a lovely episode, where it's Thanksgiving at his house and all these people come over. It's very much like season one, and just as good and just as sweet. So if you liked A Man on the Inside season one, you will really like A Man on the Inside season two, which is now streaming on Netflix with the great Ted Danson. And it's delightful. And I've been enjoying it immensely. And I've only three episodes left. Now, I don't want to go down a Beatles hole with you, because I could. Because to my mind, the Beatles were the greatest band that ever was and the greatest band that ever will be. So why are we talking about the Beatles on a film show? Well, you may remember, or you may not, but 30 years ago, this week or last week, 1995, they released the Beatles anthology. There were CDs and all, but there was primarily a documentary that was shown on UTV at the time, and it was the Beatles from the inside out. You had George, Paul and Ringo coming back together, talking about the Beatles, this sprawling 8-hour thing. There was a couple of people involved as well, but it was all Inner Sanctum stuff, and it was incredible. I remember 10 years after that, because I was a little young at that stage, even I was young once, and I watched it over two nights on DVD. What they've done now is they've re-released it. There's an extra episode where they've kind of dusted out some of the, I suppose, bootleg extra DVD clippings of when George, Paul and Ringo were together in 1995 talking about the Beatles. So there's an extra episode in this, which is okay. You feel a tiny bit like maybe they've strung it all together. It's still great to see them all together, but a lot of that stuff did exist in various versions, but they've collated it all. But what this reissue is really about is just reminding us what a brilliant anthology the Beatles anthology was. It kind of began or renewed a re-interest and a reaffirmation of the Beatles, you might suggest. And what they've done with this is nothing has changed, but it does look brighter and the sound is brilliant. It sounds better than I remember watching it 20 years ago on DVD. And it is the story of the Beatles told by the Beatles. So, I mean, what more do you want? It's on Disney Plus. It's now there, all nine parts of it. I still really enjoyed the bonus episode, but nothing can take from the magic of the story of the Beatles anthology. So, you know, I would love to show this to my kids. There are people out there who don't get or understand or are too young to know why the Beatles were so important. The anthology will explain all that. They weren't just a band. They were a social movement. That sounds like a very pretentious thing to say. But when it comes to the legacy of the Beatles, I'm going to get pretentious. So that's on Disney Plus now. It's dynamite. And quickly, before we get to George and Adam Sandler after the break, that's George Clooney, by the way. I do have to mention, I suppose, the TV event of the week in that Stranger Things is coming to an end. And Netflix, very cleverly, you would have to say, are releasing it over three tranches. So there's four episodes landed Thursday morning. I was sent the first four. I only got to see two. Thank you, Netflix. I just didn't have time. But they are going to keep Stranger Things very happy. Venka, The Upside Down, all that stuff, which will mean nothing to you if you're not a Stranger Things fan, are all there. And it begins in great fashion. And it is ready, based on what I've seen, to be a great finale. And they're releasing the second volume on Stephen's Day. And then on New Year's Day, there is going to be the finale. So for Stranger Things fans, it's manna from heaven. Based on the first two episodes, you are in for a treat, and it is still drowning in 80s sci-fi and cultural nostalgia. So Stranger Things fans, rejoice. Let me know what you might have been watching. You can email us, screentime@newstalk.com. After the break, George Clooney and Adam Sandler. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. Take a little listen to this.
Thinking about her leaving, I feel like I missed it.
We need you now. Jay's having a nervous breakdown. It's bad. It's really, really bad.
Jay?
Where are we going?
Meg, where are we going?
France.
France.
France?
Stars.
Is that Jay Kelly?
They come and go.
Pardon, Mr. Jekyll.
They come fast, they come slow.
When I look at you, I see my whole life.
You go like the last light of the sun.
I don't know who to be mad at, but I'm finding myself being very mad at you, Ron.
Be mad at me, Liz. The train was my idea.
That's the problem. I'm not allowed to be mad at you.
All you see is glory.
Lately, I feel like my life doesn't really feel real. I'm suddenly remembering things. What is that?
Memory?
That's like a movie where I'm playing myself.
Clip there from Jay Kelly, the new Netflix film that has been in cinemas, still is, and is going to be on Netflix from the 5th of December. It's a comedy drama directed and co-written by the great Noah Baumbach and has a great cast, chief among them George Clooney and Adam Sandler, not to mention Billy Crudup, and also Laura Dern. Our own Eve Hewson even pops up in there. It follows a friendship between famous actor Jay Kelly, played by George Clooney, and his manager, played by Adam Sandler, as they travel to Europe and they reflect on their life choices, their legacies, and in particular Jay Kelly on the career he's had, some of the movies, but also maybe his relationships with family. So he's kind of estranged from his eldest daughter, played by Riley Keough, and his youngest one, played by Grace Edwards. And he's going to follow one of them to Europe because they're also giving him an award in an Italian film festival. So this entourage heads to Italy. It goes to France first, and we see J. Kelly Clooney reflect on his life. So there's real shades of kind of Fellini's Eight and a Half, maybe, and even Woody Allen's Stardust Memories. And there's a few train scenes. They're on a train at one point, which would remind you particularly of that. Clooney and Sandler have a great relationship in this because Sandler is his manager, who's been taking 15% all along, but they're very tight. They're very tight. So it's a movie kind of full of regret and reflection. Clooney and Sandler are on fire in it. They are brilliant in it and brilliant together. It's going to be on Netflix on the 5th of December. George Clooney and Adam Sandler star. I'm not going to give you any introduction to the two of them because they are legends, living legends. And I spoke to them earlier in the week when they were in London. And I should mention the interview began with them kind of trying to out-Irish each other. So in case you wonder what the chaos is at the start. Oh, and I should mention cheesecake is a motif in the movie. Clooney's character Jay Kelly is given cheesecake wherever he goes because it was in his rider. Have a listen to this.
Understand us Irish.
Let's do what we can with them for the next 10 minutes, though, okay? Guys, I'm big admirers of both of you, so it's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
George, this film has a lot of regret in it. Jay has a lot of regret, and I guess we all do to a certain extent. He's regretful about his private life, also maybe some of the movies he's made. I wonder, was this a chance for you, and not to get too Freudian about it or anything, but to play a character of a life you hadn't lived, but maybe you could have, or maybe there were shades of it? I guess I'm asking how much of Jay Kelly is in George Clooney.
That was pretty Freudian, I think. That was very Freudian of you for not being Freudian. I read the script and felt very removed from the actual character, right? This is a guy who focused only on his career and was massively successful because of it. We know people like that. I'm sure you do.
Sure.
That hasn't been my experience. I think part of it is because I didn't find success until I was in my mid-30s. And by that point, I'd made good friends and I'd failed enough that you kind of, you know, when you fail a lot, You really have an understanding of how little success has to do with you as
That's
much as how much failure does. Yes.
yeah. Yeah, well, that's a great answer to a vaguely Freudian question.
Yeah. You know what? On top of that one, I did a movie, Little Nicky. I was doing very well, made a lot of young comedies. I was doing well. People were trusting me in the box office and all that stuff. Hadn't had a big bomb. Little Nicky came out and did really, lost a lot of money and all that stuff. And Pitt called me up. I was friends with Pitt back then, and when we were young, and he goes, "Congratulations, now you're free." He said that, and I said, "Oh yeah." He goes, "The pain you're feeling, that's okay. Just this is just go. You're supposed to have bombs. You're supposed to have this way. You're free to do whatever the hell you want. You can be an artist."
That's a
It
nice thing
was
to
cool.
say. Not Brad Pitt, Frank Pitt.
Down in the pits.
Sally Pitt called him and said, "Now you're free." Thank you.
I kept saying, "Who is
Who is this?
what?" And she's just like, "You'll find out."
You'll see,
I'd
Sally.
love to. I'd love to ask you more about Sally Pitt, but listen, Adam, you know
Yes.
Ron loves Jay, okay?
Yeah.
But as is pointed out many times, he's also getting 15%. So, in terms of the
12%.
character,
He says 15. He
It's
doesn't even
15.
know what he.
It's 15.
All right.
So, how do you see Ron? Like, is he wholly devoted to him, or is there
Yes.
any part of him that sees him as he's going to afford me a certain lifestyle?
I don't think that was it. I don't think that was on my mind. And
Mm-mm.
I think as maybe it was when we were young and first starting out, and I wanted Jay Kelly to accept a few jobs so I could pay the rent. But I think we're both at a place where money is secondary. It's
Yeah.
part the teamwork. And so I don't. So when he brings that up, Jay Kelly, not Clooney. Clooney's never said that to me before. But Jay Kelly hit me with that one. Yeah, that was a stunning shot to the
Straight to
head
the
of.
chops,
I didn't like that.
No, it's not
It
nice.
wasn't nice of you.
It's a not a nice thing.
And
I'm
you did
not.
it take after
I
take.
did it many times. And
And
I have to say,
yeah.
watching you with like the little tear and stuff,
Yeah.
it made me feel good inside.
You like to see him cry. We all do, I guess, yeah.
When you have that one little kid, there's a lot of nice little kids, and then there's that one kid you really just want to see cry.
You want to hurt? You got me every time, man.
There's always one kid you go, oh, yeah,
I would plead with him with my eyes. Don't say it on this take. And he's like, "I'm gonna do it, buddy."
George, the cheesecake, right? Is it a, it's a great motif in the movie because it shows up everywhere and you don't want it. But is it a metaphor for having your cake and eat it? How do you see the cheesecake in
Well,
this
that's good.
film?
Well, look at you.
You did
Look at you,
fabulous.
man. You're our last interview, and you
Bringing it
took it
home.
to a new level
Well,
just
better
now,
level.
Wow.
I'm gonna say.
Well, thank you.
I think mostly what it was about is the idea that people, when you get in a certain position in our industry, there's these things called a writer. And Adam and I both have writers, although if you asked either of
We
us,
don't know what's on them,
we have
yeah.
no idea what's on them, because writers are kind of developed by people who have worked for you, who someone's asked you a question, you go, oh yeah, I like that. And then all of a sudden, every phone call, he has to have Fuji apples in his, in his trailer. And so I find that to be, now listen, I know a couple actors who sort of actively want to make sure they're writer,
Some
but
people.
most of the time it happens sort of haphazardly, and you have to actively go in and say, guys, I don't need that. I don't need cake anymore.
I got hit recently with I went to a place that for our careers, whatever the hell it was, and I said, "Hey, maybe some Chinese food when I get there." Then I get there and they ordered all this Chinese food for me that I didn't love. And I said, "Who picked this?" And I said to my buddy Lockard, "Who picked this, man? You know I don't like that." He said, "Oh, I think like you were on a diet at the time when you ordered Chinese, so they just." I said, "Well, the diet's over. It was like 20 years ago. It was all healthy Chinese. It got me very angry."
So the lesson is update the rider. All rock
That's the
stars and actors.
lesson. That's the lesson.
Adam, My favorite film of yours is a film called Punch Drunk Love.
Yes, Sally Pitt got me that role.
Yes, she did get you that role.
God bless Sally Pitt. I'm going to have to meet this lady.
You're free now, and then you did that role.
But I tell you, right? You are socially isolated in that film. You also say at one point, you know, I have more anger in me than you've ever met before, or something along those lines. Was that film, I don't know, maybe slightly ahead of its time or something? Like, this, do a lot of people mention that film to you? He's lonely and angry yet sweet. And it seems to me that maybe the world is a bit like that at the moment. So I wonder,
Adam's like that too at the moment.
Not at this moment. I feel kind, but I'm feeling pain, knowing that you want to hurt me. But I don't know what it was. It was very real. It was very, Paul Thomas Anderson, mm-hmm. who directed the movie, mm-hmm. he told me that he felt a lot like Barry Egan. He had sisters and he had family, and he felt like he'd clam up and couldn't get everything out there, and was holding on to something inside, and that he had to let go, and it would come out in weird places. And so, I've had that. We've all had that for sure.
Yeah. George, you're probably asked this a lot when you're talking to Irish people and stuff. People famously know you certainly had at one point a nice house in Lake Como. And that popped into my head when I was watching
A nice house in Lake Como.
Is Como in Ireland? Where is that?
It's in Ireland, yes. Yeah.
But that's what I was going to say. You seem to love Ireland. Have you ever thought about, I don't know, spending an extended amount of time here, maybe?
Yes. Wow. I go to Dublin. I do enjoy Dublin.
So do I.
I like it. That's a very fun city.
A fantastic.
My family's from an area around Abbeyleet.
Yeah.
Pretty beautiful area. Mm-hmm. It's funny. There's a bunch of Clooneys there. They spell it differently, a lot of them.
With what? How?
The C-L-U-N-Y. There's a little bit of that. There's all kinds of different versions.
Yeah.
And I do love it there very much. But, you know, like we're in London right now.
Yeah.
Much like Ireland, the weather here will kill a man.
That's fine.
Yeah, and we have to go indoors a lot.
Yes. Well, yeah, like here, you know, so it's what, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon right now? It's pouring down rain, and everybody's standing outside with a pint of beer, drinking with their shirts off. And you go, all right, well, here we go.
Sounds very Celtic.
It is very Celtic.
Last thing, Adam, you mentioned a couple of failures and Sally Pitt delivered them or whatever. Yeah. Wait till you hear this. You may be aware of this, right? But I Googled you before I came on, right? Yeah. And this morning. And the most, don't worry, it's not bad, but it's kind of fascinating. Okay. There is a story in the New York Times, like an opinion piece, an essay. It's 6 days old. And the title is Adam Sandler is the Light, L-I-G-H-T, We Need Right Now.
Yeah.
Now, it was behind a paywall, so I didn't get a chance to read it. But they were clearly saying your time has come or something like that. Does that make you smile or secretly go F you to any of those people who said nasty things?
No F U's ever. I'll tell you what, I did not read the article. I don't really read much on me, but I did get my wife texted me that title, my mom. So stuff like that makes me very happy for them. When I was young and I would get some bad stuff written about me or my movies, the first thought I always had was, oh Lord, my mom and my dad are going to have to hear it in their town and be questioned about it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That was first panicky. And then, I'll take it. I've had a very long, fortunate career and I'm just, there's no FUs involved.
Nice. Are you kidding? What a nice thing to say about it.
It's true.
Yeah, it is lovely. Yeah. But you see, I thought you were always the light we needed without going to smoke up your bum, you know?
Oh, I see.
Appreciate it, buddy.
I see where you were playing it.
Well, let me enjoy this.
You suck up. I'm the Irishman.
Because he knows I would move to Ireland. I can deal with weather.
Oh, he likes bad weather.
I grew up in New Hampshire with a lot of Irish kids. And we all handled the snow together, and I loved it.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you for taking the time, guys. Hopefully we'll meet with our shirts off outside a rainy pub someday.
With a pint.
Good luck with Jake Elliott and continued success.
Yeah. Great to see you, bud. Okay. Thank you.
You too. Cheers. Adam Sandler and George Clooney there, trying to out-Irish each other and all sorts of things. Cheesecake and Freud. And of course, Jay Kelly, which is on Netflix from December 5th. And it was great to talk to the guys. And what good spirits they were. It's nice when you meet such big stars and they're such nice people. Do take note, rising stars. Be as nice as Clooney and Sandler and you might get there faster. Anyway, after the break, there's more stars coming because I'm going to be talking to Sydney Sweeney about playing a boxer in her new movie, Christie. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talk's TV and movie show. Now we turn to the week's big new cinema release, and it's this.
And you must be the lady I've been hearing so much about. Christie, how old are you?
I'm 24, sir.
You're pretty. And you really a fighter?
Yes, sir. It's an honor to meet you, Mr. King.
Well, tell me about yourself. Jesse here says that you fight in all pink. That's good. I like pink.
Well, I'm from West Virginia.
What's that got to do with pink?
Nothing, sir. I'm just telling you about myself.
Yeah, pink was my idea.
West Virginia. Coal miner country.
Yes, sir. My daddy and my brother worked the mines.
So what in the hell are you fighting, Christie? What's a pretty girl like you doing getting punched in the face for a living?
I'm good at it, sir.
Yes, you heard Chad L. Coleman, the actor there, playing Don King opposite Sydney Sweeney, playing Christie Martin. This is a new movie called Christie, starring Sydney Sweeney. It's a pulsating sports movie, I guess you'd call it, following the extraordinary and indeed groundbreaking story of Christie Martin, who was a female boxer, and it charts her rise from small town obscurity to international prominence and dominance, and then some serious problems in her private life. Raised as a coal miner's daughter, Christie Martin never dared to dream of a future that would uproot the confines of her small West Virginia town. That is, until she realized she was really good at knocking people out, fueled by an instinctive fighting spirit and a desire to wrestle her way from societal expectations and an unshakable desire to win. She charged fist first into the combative and competitive world of professional boxing. Now, under the watchful guidance and demanding standards of her trainer turned manager husband, Jim Martin, played in this by Ben Foster, while Christie flaunts a fiery persona inside the ring, her fiercest battles smolder silently outside of it as she grapples with family dynamics. She did strange relationship with her mother, identity issues, and a relationship with her husband manager that might be the most threatening of all. Christie's a tenacious character, and this is a story of a tenacious woman who's still very much alive, Christie Martin, and the film has her blessing. I think this is a very good sports come human drama with a powerful performance at its center by Sydney Sweeney. So Sydney Sweeney is a very famous actress, maybe one of the most famous on the planet now for all sorts of reasons. First of all, her roles in everything from The White Lotus to The Handmaid's Tale, then onto movies like Immaculate, in Madam Web, which was not a great movie, but she was also in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There's been some controversies outside of the movies, in particular an American Jeans ad for American Eagle jeans that had lots of different interpretations, and the word jeans, some people felt, was used rather pointedly, let's say. She's also apparently a supporter of the Republican Party, which has angered a lot of liberal Hollywood. We didn't get into any of that when I spoke to her about her role in Christie. I also spoke to her co-star, Ben Foster, who plays her husband turned manager, or manager turned husband, Jim Martin. Ben Foster's a great actor in Hell or High Water, Leave No Trace. He starred as disgraced cyclist Lance Armstrong and Stephen Frears, The Programme. And of course, you may remember him from 6 Feet Under, where he was great. So I spoke to Sydney Sweeney and Ben Foster about their roles in Christie. Hello. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you? Greetings from Dublin, Ireland.
Hello, hello.
Congratulations on the film. It's fantastic. Sydney, you're still very young, but you've been acting a long time because you started earlier. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is this the hardest role you've ever played?
Yes,
it definitely was one of the most challenging characters that I've taken on physically and mentally. Yeah.
And you really took it on physically, it seems. You, in essence, learned to box.
I did. I gained 35 pounds for the role. I actually grew up kickboxing and grappling. So I knew of the world. I knew how to fight. Of course, boxing is different than kickboxing. Mm-hmm. Stances are different. You square up differently. And then also, I'm also fighting like somebody else. I'm having to retrain my brain altogether to move like Christy and fight like Christy. So that was a challenge in its own right. But I did come from a background of fighting.
Well, you pulled it off. Ben, I actually heard in an interview this morning when I was just looking around, Christy Martin, the actual lady who Sydney plays, saying, you were Jim Martin. That's how much you nailed it when she saw it. I saw that this morning. And I'm just wondering, you know, when we first meet him, we get signs of his unpleasantness and it gets worse and worse. And it's no spoiler to say he's downright horrible by the end. Is there a big emotional toll on you playing someone that devoid of humanity, I wonder? Like, do you go home at night going, whew, I need a break?
Sure. There. If you spend all day thinking about glass blowing, you're going to dream about glass blowing. I happen to be thinking about Jim Martin. And Jim Martin was a very complicated man with a very complicated need for control in everything that he did, and mostly in regards to his lead boxer and also his wife.
Mm.
So yes, there's certainly days with the emotional crimes that are happening every day across the world behind closed doors. I can be exhausted about it, but it did feel purposeful to be telling this story, and I felt that all our collaborators wanted to share that.
Sure, absolutely. And Sydney, I suppose I don't know what the right word is, but the intriguing thing about Christy's character is that she's a tough boxer, and yet she's so fragile in certain aspects of her life, almost like a child, not aware of what she's into. I presume that's part of an appeal as an actress.
I mean, it's playing a woman, or complicated. There's a lot of layers, and there's a lot of life, and there's a lot of things to discover and explore. So it's always a treat to be able to play a character that has more complexities than what's just on the page. And I'm really blessed to be during a time where there's a lot of really, really amazing female characters that are being written for screen. And then it just happens that Christy's a real life person, and she's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Both of you have Irish surnames, and I'm sorry to Irish it up, but Sydney, I just, you know, sometimes I talk to actresses like Kerry Washington, whose first name is Irish, and they have huge interest in their Irish heritage. And then others are like, nah, it's just a name. Like Eddie Murphy, for instance, who I spoke to once, he said, that was my slave name. I've nothing to do with Ireland. I wonder, is your Irish heritage of big or little interest to you?
It's actually huge interest to me. So my mom's side is Irish, and we have a family book that my great great grandfather, and I might be getting this wrong, and my mom will call me after this interview and be like, Sydney, but I'm trying to remember precisely. But we have a book that either my great great grandpa wrote or something, and it's like diaries and like timelines of how he left Ireland, and they ended up in Iceland, and then they came down through Canada and ended up in Idaho. I want to say, it was like Halloran, Holloway.
Halloran sounds about right.
Yeah, I'm Irish descent. I've never been. I was just telling Ben here that I've always wanted to go, and I've always wanted to find like where my family used to live and any family members that are like branched off from there. But yeah, they.
Well, there's There's still plenty of time. That can happen, you know.
And I hope
you,
so.
You'll be more than welcome. Ben, we're out of time, so I'm sorry. I didn't have time to get into Foster, but maybe on the next
getting back to Dublin.
Okay, there you go. A man well aware of his Irish heritage, it seems. Nice to talk to you guys and continued success.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Appreciate you.
Bye bye. Sydney Sweeney there, Irishing it up along with Ben Foster. And they're talking to me about Christie, which is in cinemas now from this Friday, the 28th of November. Now, Christie was directed by Australian filmmaker David McCod, who gave us Animal Kingdom and War Machine. And he co-wrote the screenplay with his partner in life, Mira Fuchs. And I spoke to both of them about making Christie and also about working together. Mira, if I could start with you, I've been a journalist for a good while now in a national radio station where we do lots of sport. We have Katie Taylor in Ireland. I had never heard of Christie Martin before, which just seems bananas. I'm wondering, was that, having watched the movie and heard her story, I was like, how do I not know about this? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but was that one of the motivations of writing this, that the world should hear this story?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I was the same. We both were. We hadn't heard of Christie before. I'm not in the sports world. Certainly wasn't a boxing fan until now. And I was amazed when I heard of her story, and it felt kind of remarkable in a way that no one had made a film about her life, and it sort of felt in a lot of ways urgent, I would say. Yeah. In terms of her story being a really great representation of many different things, not just her successes in sport, but of the other challenges in her life. It just felt there were so many intersecting things in one woman's life, and kind of felt inevitable.
Yeah, and David, you know, this is a serious movie with serious themes. But at the same time, you know, you want to entertain people and get people into the cinema. And it seems to me, like, I love boxing movies, from Rocky to, you know, the list is endless. So not to do a disservice to the trauma Christie went through, but I wonder, is it fun to make a boxing movie? Because it's such a visceral thing to watch. I'm sure it must be fun and challenging to make as well.
Yeah, I mean, I went into it not knowing what my experience of that was going to be. I mean, I've done a little bit of fighting in other movies I've made, but not like this.
Yeah.
I think I was just blessed in having a wonderful stunt coordinator / fight choreographer in Wally Garcia, a whole team of the women who were playing Sydney's Christie's opponents, all like amazing stunt women.
Yeah.
And then obviously having Sydney Sweeney, who just wanted it. She was up for it. She wanted to hit and she wanted to be hit. And so once you get into that and you've got that combination of people in the ring, it actually started to feel like dance, you know, but dangerous dance.
Yeah, a very dangerous dance. It's funny, Christie is such a popular Irish name, and we have a famous singer called Christie Moore, and now deceased one called Christie Dignam. There was an Irish movie called Christie. Every time I see Christie there, I have to remind myself it's your movie I'm talking to you about. Can I ask you this, guys? You're probably asked this a lot, so you can dispense with it in 30 seconds, but the fact that you guys, according to the production notes, are partners in life as well as in the art, is that strange? I adore my wife, but the idea of making radio shows with her would just be crazy. I mean, how do you navigate making the dinner and not talking about work past 7 o'clock at night, or do you?
No, we don't. We talk about work all the time. This is the first time we've ever done it officially. We've worked together. I've worked as an actor on some of David's early films, but we've never worked in this capacity officially. We do it unofficially. We're always involved in each other's stuff, but this was the first time, and we're pretty nervous about it, I have to say.
Yeah.
We didn't know. We thought this could break us. Could be the thing that tips us over the edge.
Yeah, but we've been together like 20 years, and this is the first time we've ever worked this intensely in this way. Mm. And I don't know about you. I went into it really nervous.
Yeah,
I went into it going, nervous. Okay, this could go horribly wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But like almost instantly, it was fun.
It was great. I mean, we do get a bit obsessive about it. Like there was a period of almost probably 2 years now. It's like we talk a lot about the movie, kind of what you have to do.
Absolutely.
But it's really nice about being able to kind of have your collaborator there cooking dinner.
Well, and you're both still smiling. David, just finally, I spoke to your fellow countryman and director, Lee Whannell, who used to be a film critic. And it was so funny. He was like, you know, it's very strange when you make movies, having once been reviewing them. You used to edit a film magazine in Australia. And I wonder, does, you know, once you get behind the camera, does a part of you think back and go, man, I didn't know what I was talking about when I was working at my word processor critiquing films?
I'm actually kind of amazed at how quickly I just put that aside. It was almost as though that whole world that I spent, that whole period I spent writing about films, talking to filmmakers and reviewing films, never felt like what I was actually supposed to be doing. It was just still, it was like a continuation of my film school. But I do now look at it and realize, oh, you know, there are certain things that, and it's given me a certain resilience to like any negative press I get. Because I remember when I was doing that, when you're just doing that day in, day out, you just start to become, you start to die inside. You're just watching movie after movie after movie after movie, and it just becomes just like blah, blah, blah. And and you start to hate all of them, you know? And so I don't really, I was amazed at how quickly I just, I remember leaving that job thinking, I didn't go to film school to write about what other people are doing, and just jumped off the cliff and luckily kind of landed on my feet.
Indeed you did. Nice to meet you guys. Thanks.
So nice to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you. Here's
director David McCod and his screenplay partner there and his partner in life, Mira Fuchs, talking to me about directing and writing Christie, which is now in cinemas. That is it for this week, a busy show full of stars. If you'd like to listen back to this or any other show, they are all up there from the last 6+ years. Interviews with everyone from Julia Roberts to George Clooney, as you heard there, to Eddie Murphy, all sorts of people. Benedict Cumberbatch, Best of the Irish as well, Jim Sheridan, all sorts of people. So just stick it in to a podcast player Screen Time. Subscribe to it. You can listen on the Go Loud app. You can listen anywhere. So I got an email from someone nice this week saying they were listening back through the archive. I'm not suggesting you do all 6 years, but maybe put in something you might like there and you can listen back to it. That is it for this week. If you want to get in touch, please email screentime@newstalk.com. I will just remind you, this show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app or wherever you choose to get your podcast. And of course, it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Just have time to play a little music and I'm going to indulge myself. I was at Bob Dylan during the week. Here's a song he won an Oscar for Wonder Boys. And this is Things Have Changed. So I will leave you with that and wish you a happy remainder to your weekend.
A worried man with a worried mind. No one in front of me and nothing behind. There's a woman on my lap and she's drinking champagne. That white skin got assassin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sci-fi tinted skies. I'm wild dressed, waiting on the last. Standing on the gallows with my head in the news. Any minute now I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy at times, I swear. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. This place ain't doing me any good. I'm in the wrong town, I should be in Hollywood. Just for a second there I thought I saw something move. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts, gonna dress in drag. Only a fool here would think he's got anything to prove. A lot of water under the bridge, a lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen.
People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in time, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Yeah.